Thank you, Mr. Call, and good morning again, brother. I had a change in the schedule. I guess no one thought to print out the announcements that usually come from either Kevin Call or our pastor. I do have one other announcement that I would like to make that I neglected to pass it on to Mr. Call. But my son David is having some very difficult problems. As most of you know, over the course of years, he's had about seven major operations, maybe another one or two that was somewhat minor. And then the last couple of years, he's had a couple of very major surgeries that he's been trying to recuperate from. And just recently, he's having severe pains in a hip that he had an artificial joint installed I believe it's been about 22 years ago. And at the time, they told him that joint is on average, it would last about 12 years, so it's about 10 years beyond an expected lifespan. And he is concerned that that artificial joint is wearing out to the point that's causing the pain. He doesn't know that. We don't know that. The doctor hasn't been able to get an X-ray yet. He has an appointment coming up. But at any rate, there's a possibility that after his latest surgery, he has been walking somewhat more straight than he was before. He always had a tendency to lean to one side as he either sat in a chair or walked. But he's been trying to walk straighter, and there's a possibility that it's just stretching the ligaments and the muscles in that side as a result of, the shift in his body weight. I'm hoping that is the case because that's much less severe than having to go in there and tear out an artificial joint and put another one in. And mentally, he's in no condition to face that. He's had so many operations. So, prayers are appreciated. Appreciate the positive message that Mr. Call gave us this morning. It's kind of odd. I've been thinking a little bit about how negative sometimes we get, including me. You know, I sit and I watch television, and it seems like all the news is bad. You very seldom ever hear anything good. And you have a tendency to sit there, you know, why doesn't somebody do something? The world's going to pot and nobody's taking any action. You know, it just gets worse and worse and worse. Why don't they do something? And it came to me recently, you know, God called us to do something. Now, we can't go march on Washington. It wouldn't do us any good. They would just laugh at us. We have no power like that. But God has a plan. And He's working out a plan. And He called you and I to be a part of that plan. A significant part of that plan. Because God is going to bring peace to the earth. And He's going to use you and you and you if we do what God tells us to do, if we have the faith to believe that God is going to make things better and God is going to give us a part in making things better. And, you know, it's interesting, before services, just in the course of conversation, Mr. Ho was talking about that, you know, we get so negative sometimes in the church. So obviously he's been thinking along the same lines. We need to forget about the world. the systems of this world for all practical purposes, they're gone. Goodbye. Goodbye. They're doomed. I do believe that it is our responsibility to be a good Samaritan, and if we can help a little bit and ease the pain a little bit for some person or some group, that we're obligated to do that. We should do that. But as far as getting involved in the systems of this world and going to save this world by those systems, forget it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because of conservatives, because of the Tea Party, because of the liberals, because of the socialists. It's just not going to happen. The systems of this world are doomed. Say goodbye to them. Forget them. God has a plan. He has a job for you. He has a job for me. And we have to start somewhere. You know, we meet here, probably average somewhere 12, maybe 12 people. I think we have about 14 regular members that come here, besides the visitors that come down from Portsmouth. A small group. I guess more than anyone else can say that I watched God start from an idea, from nothing, and build a church in Prestonsburg, Kentucky, that moved to Paintsville, Kentucky, that had an average attendance of more than 150 people. God did it. God can do it. Do we believe it? Or do we believe that we're doomed to just get smaller and smaller until the church cannot afford to maintain a group in this area? What are we going to believe? I have chosen as the title for my split sermon this morning, The Power of Believing. And the Bible is filled with verses that contain the word belief. I'm not going to make any attempt to read them all. We'd be here till dark, probably. I'll skip through and I'll read a few of them. Going back to the Old Testament, I want to refer briefly to a couple of verses in the Old Testament. 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 20. It says, "And they rose early in the morning and went forth into the wilderness of Tekoa. And as they went forth, Jehoshaphat stood and said, Hear me, O Judah, you inhabitants of Jerusalem. Believe in the Lord your God, so shall you be established. Believe his prophets, so shall you prosper." That last sentence is what I want to focus in on here. Believe. Do we have the capacity to truly believe? And what do we believe? Do we have a positive outlook of what's going to happen in the future? Or is it all doom and gloom? Woe is me, you know, the world is going to pot, which of course it is. But the question is, do we have to concentrate on that? Is that where we're going to put our mind? That's what I've done in the past. You know, I'll just admit it. I'm as guilty or maybe more guilty than anyone here. But I have decided that I'm going to have a new mindset. I'm going to concentrate on the good news, and there is lots of it. There is lots of it. If you just look in the Bible, you know, you go back to what we used to call the big three or the big four, study, prayer, meditating, fasting. Focus your mind on the big four. And that helps you to believe. If you focus your mind on those things, your belief in God and his salvation and the peace that's coming to this earth will increase and increase. And as you think more positive, you'll be more happy. The doom and gloom will be a thing of the past. It will go away. And I believe it will go. I believe that this church can grow. I know God can do it. We have a part in it. The other verse in the Old Testament that I wanted to refer to is Isaiah 43 and verse 10. Isaiah 43 and verse 10. Isaiah 43, verse 10. You are my witnesses, saith the Lord, and my servant, whom I have chosen, that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me there was no God formed, neither shall there be after me. I am the Lord, and beside me there is no Savior. Our future, the means to our future, it lies within this book, God's Word, the Bible. And that's where our mind should be focused, and the good news that this book contains. Now I want to go to the New Testament, and I'll skip through and read a few verses from the New Testament that has to do with believing. First, I want to go to Matthew 9, verse 27. Matthew 9, verse 27. I'll read through verse 30. And when Jesus departed there, two blind men followed him, crying and saying, "You son of David, have mercy on us." And when he was come into the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to them, "Believe you that I am able to do this?" They said unto him, "Yea, Lord." Then touched he their eyes, saying, "According to your faith be it unto you." And their eyes were opened. But he said, "According to your faith." They believed. They said they believed. Evidently, they did believe. I think, had they not believed, they would have still been blind till the day they died. In Mark chapter 9, verse 17, we'll skip through a few verses here, starting with verse 17. One of the multitude answered, saying, "Master, I have brought unto you my son, which has a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not." They cannot. Verse 19, Jesus said, "Bring him to me." Going on down to verse 21, he asked, "How long is it ago since this came upon him?" And he said, "Of a child." Verse 23, the last part of it, it says, Jesus said unto him, "If you can believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." All things are possible to him that believeth. So I'm asking you again, do you believe that this congregation can grow? Do you believe that the people in this congregation can have a brighter, happier outlook on life and be more thankful for the good news that we have been given to us freely? Will you believe it? Do you believe it? If we believe, it can happen. It has happened before, right in this area. It can happen again. I watched it happen, and then I watched it deteriorate. I watch people begin to follow a man instead of following God. And look where we are now. It doesn't have to stay that way. And I believe that it will not stay that way. I believe that we're going to see changes for the better, for the positive. I hope you will believe with me. Anyway, when Jesus asked, how long has it been with him? He said, of a child. He said, since he was a child. Going down to verse 22. I just read that. If you can believe, all things are possible to him that believe. Verse 24. The father said, I believe. Help you my unbelief. So he did believe, but he recognized his belief is not perfect. So we need to do likewise. We need to follow suit. I'm sure we believe. You know, we have a degree of belief or we wouldn't be here today. We have to have that degree of belief. But is it sufficient? Is our belief sufficient? Can we believe to the extent that we're going to see healings in this congregation and in other congregations in God's church? I remember back in the worldwide in the 60s, hardly a week went by but what we heard the news from somewhere, someone who had maybe been scheduled for a major operation and went in to the doctor and found out, well, the problem somehow isn't there anymore. You don't need the operation. That's happened again and again and again. That happened in God's church. Is God any less powerful today than he was then? He's the same God. He's got the same mindset, the same goal, the same word. What has changed? I believe it's belief. The belief. The people today don't have the belief that we had back then. We let it kind of slip away. Failing to believe God's word. Failing to believe that God has the power to do miracles, and not only has the power, is anxious to do them if it will be right and good for us. But it's only right and good for us if we have the right attitude. If we give the credit where credit is due. Give the credit to God. We have the belief. We know it can happen. We know we can't do it by ourselves. Remember, even Jesus Christ said when he was in the flesh, he said, of my own self, meaning by myself, I can do nothing. I can't do a single thing by myself. The Father within me, he does the works. Okay, we need to have that same attitude. We need to admit, you and I can't do a single thing that is worth talking about. Nothing. In fact, we couldn't even breathe unless God provided the oxygen for us. We're dependent on God. But we have a part to play in the way that God acts towards us. We have to believe. And if we begin to believe, you will see miracles again. They're going to come at the end time. There are going to be miracles. Unfortunately, I guess for some of us, some of those miracles are going to be done by evil people, believe it or not. But God is going to do miracles as well, and God is going to give power, especially to his two witnesses, to do miracles. We know that that's going to happen. Anyway, going on here in verse 25, and Jesus, going down into verses, he rebuked the foul spirit, said, come out of him and enter no more into him. In verse 26, he fell down as one dead. And the people said, he's dead. He's dead. This child has died. Verse 27, Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. Then later on, verse 28, the disciples came to Jesus and says, why could we not cast him out? And Jesus said, this kind can come forth by nothing but by prayer and fasting. So, there is one of those keys, or in fact, there's two of those keys for increasing your belief, increasing your ability to believe by prayer and fasting. as well as study and meditation. Mark 11, verse 23. Verily I say unto you that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, be you removed, and be you cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he says shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he says. If we believe and doubt not, there is the problem. Doubt not. You remember the one incident where Peter had almost perfect faith for about 10 seconds, I think. And he walked on the water. He took a few steps. But what happened? A doubt entered his mind and he began to sink. So I know it's difficult for us as human beings to have absolute perfect belief. You know, the doubts are there ready to come into our mind if we allow it. And I don't know whether we'll ever be able to keep them out 100% in this life as a flesh and blood human being. I kind of doubt it. But we can certainly improve. We can certainly move in the right direction and have more belief than we've ever had before. We can have more belief than we ever dreamed that we could ever have. Now, a word of caution here, because there is a time frame involved and there is the doubt involved. As I mentioned, it's very, very difficult to completely get rid of every last bit of doubt. But the time frame is involved here, and I believe that when Jesus spoke these words that we can, by our own thinking, we can move mountains, I think that he was looking ahead to the time when we're spirit beings in God's kingdom, because I don't know anyone walking around in the flesh who has commanded mountains to move and just watch them magically move. I don't know anyone like that. Be nice, but doesn't happen. Also, another word of caution here, there are limitations. You remember, as it says in Luke 12:25, and I won't turn there, but we cannot take thought and add a foot to our height. It doesn't happen that way. There are some limitations, but the possibilities are absolutely tremendous. They're beyond what we can actually imagine. And other people have delved into this idea of believing or not believing. I think, did I read verse 24, the last part of it? Believe that you shall receive them, and you shall have them. I want to go to Luke, kind of watch the time. I've got probably more information than I can cover. But I want to go to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, we'll start reading in verse 41. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was the ruler of a synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years old, and she lay dying. But as he went, the people thronged him. Drop down now to verse 49. But while he yet spoke, there come one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, "Your daughter is dead. Don't trouble the master. She's already dead." Verse 50. Jesus heard it and answered him, saying, "Fear not, believe only, and she shall be made whole." Verse 51. So he went to the house. He suffered no man to go in except for Peter, James, and John, and the father and mother of the maiden. So what did they do when they got inside? Verse 52, all wept and bewailed her, but he said, weep not, she's not dead, but sleepeth. And they believed every word he said. No, that's not what the next verse says there. They laughed him to scorn. They didn't believe him, knowing that she was dead. And Jesus didn't deny that she was dead. So what did he do? He put them all out, including Peter, James, and John. He put them out. You know, you unbelievers, get out of here. You're not adding to the situation. Your thoughts are pulling away from the positive results that I'm looking for. I don't want this unbelief near me in what I'm going to do, because I have belief. He put them all out. He put them all out and took her by the hand and called, saying, maid, arise. Her spirit came again, so she was dead. And she rose straightway, and he commanded to give her meat. The power of believing. Of course, you know, we're not Jesus. But we have some of that power. God has given it to us. God has given us the power to believe. And he told us again and again that if we believe, we can have what we ask for. In other words, what we believe in. First John 3, verse 23. 1 John 3, verse 23. And this is his commandment, that we should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as he gave us commandments. Loving one another means cooperating with one another, agreeing with one another, being on the same team, if you will, working together to accomplish the same goals. I want to go to James 2. James chapter 2. There's about three verses there that I'd like to cover. James 2, verse 18. Yes, a man may say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. I wanted to include these verses here because belief is the beginning, but it's not the end. It requires works. Works are tied in with believing. If we truly believe that we can accomplish something, we will work to accomplish it. If we don't believe we can accomplish it, we'll do nothing. So works are very much tied in. I don't want to give the impression that I believe that, you know, you can sit on your couch and just believe everything is going to happen. It's going to be better tomorrow, and the next day is better yet, but I'll just sit here and watch TV and say, the world's going to pot. I can't do a thing. We have to believe. We have to follow up with work. With work. Verse 20 of James 2. But will you know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. Then he repeats it again in verse 26. For as the body without the spirit is dead, we just read about the little girl whose spirit had left her. She was dead. She was dead. But Jesus said her spirit came back. He brought her spirit back, and she arose. So it fits right in with what James is saying here. For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. So there is work involved, to be sure. There is ample evidence that believing works the same way for all human beings, even people who are not called, who do not understand God's overall plan. It is something that God has given to humankind, and it works for people who has no concept of God's seven-step plan to bring peace to the earth. They have no concept of that, but their belief still works. When you think about it, you think about the giant corporations, or think about the big organizations that's done much good. Where did they start? First of all, it was an idea in somebody's mind. It had to be an idea. Somebody got an idea. Now, what came after the idea? There was a belief, you know, that this can work. I, and for us Christians, we need to say, I, with God's help, can accomplish this. God can do this through me. In other words, I can't do it by myself. You know, I know who I am. I know I'm of the weak and the foolish, but I know who God is too. And God can use me because he says, and we know he used a donkey one time to give instructions to a man, and he said, I can make this rock speak. I can give this rock a mouth and make it speak, and I believe that he can. If he can do that, he can use you. He can use me if we're willing, if we believe. If we don't believe, forget it. Forget it. We have a part in it. We have a part. There are many books that have dealt with the subject of believing. I brought one with me. You probably all heard of The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. You may or may not have heard The Key to Happiness by Harold Sherman. The one that I brought with me is TNT, The Power Within You. He relates that power to TNT. You know, back in World War II days, TNT was the big explosive. You know, it could really blow things up in a hurry, change the landscape, if you will, instantly. And he compares this idea of believing to that kind of power. It can change the landscape beyond what you may be able to believe or may have been able to believe in the past. It can do it. The belief is what inspires God to bring it about. It attracts it to you. The book that I have here, TNT, The Power Within You, it is written by Claude M. Bristol and Harold Sherman. Harold Sherman co-authored this book. But in this book, there's a story about Mr. Jones having bad luck. Bad luck. He was, I think, he was an advertising man, and he was getting nowhere in his job. He was kind of discouraged, you know, just plugging along. He had a job. He had an income. He had been a world traveler. He had been around the world. You know, he knew what went on in the world, but he wasn't satisfied with where he was. So he began looking for a position where he could be happy. And he, since he was an advertiser and since he was a world traveler, he found a magazine that they made up a title in this book. They called it World Travel Magazine. So this Mr. Jones went to the owner, and he said, basically, you know, I would like a job as your advertising manager. I've got experience, you know, advertising. And the owner said, well, said, we've got an advertising manager. Said, we're very happy with him. He's done a great job for us. As far as we're concerned, he's got a lifetime position here with this company. And Mr., you know, the present advertising manager was Mr. Haley. So Mr. Jones said, whenever you have a meeting and the advertising manager is involved, he said, let me come in and sit in on the meeting, and, you know, I may be able to help out here and there. You don't have to pay me anything. I'll just be a help. And the owner says, well, he said, that sounds kind of good to me, but said, Mr. Haley may have some objection, somebody coming in sitting there who wants to take his job. He may object. So Mr. Jones goes to Mr. Haley, and he talks to him, and you know, they in the same business, and they get along real good, and they begin to like each other. And Mr. Haley says, yeah, Mr. Jones, come on in. He says, sit in on the meetings. We'll be glad to have you. And Mr. Jones did that for 8 years. No pay. He had a job somewhere else. He had an income. He had a way to make a living. But whenever they had a meeting, well, he come and he sat in on it, and he gave his ideas, and he helped the company tremendously. Then one day, out of the blue, after about 8 years, Mr. Haley got an offer of a job in California. And he had been thinking about, he'd like to live in California because he had some health problems and that'd be a good place to live. And now here I'm offered a job, so he took it. And Mr. Jones ended up being the advertising manager of the magazine. He believed. He believed so much that he sat there for 8 years and he helped out for nothing. He gave a tremendous service to the company. Again, I'm about to run out of time, but there's another story I'd like to relate. It's in this book, TNT, The Power Within You. There was a Mr. H.C. Mattern, M-A-T-T-E-R-N, I would think you would pronounce it. And he was having bad luck. He was in Pennsylvania. He had family problems. He had financial problems. Decided, I'm going to go to the big city, you know, New York City, and maybe I can make it there. And he got up there, couldn't get a job, and he was getting more and more discouraged. Down to his last few dollars, he was about 7 weeks behind on his rent, his room rent, where he was staying. And he decided, you know, there's no way out of this. No way out of this mess, except maybe suicide. And he decided, that's what I've got to do. You know, I've got to kill myself. Got a few little errands I want to take care of. One of them led him through the basement bookstore of Macy's in New York City. And he walked through there and he glanced over at a table and he saw the title of this book, Your Key to Happiness by Harold Sherman. He said, ah, that's a bunch of bunk, you know. There is no key to happiness. That's a farce. I don't want anything to do with that. And but it kind of planted a bug in his mind. And he went on and did his errand, and he got out on the sidewalk, and he's still thinking about that title. And for some reason or another, he went back and he spent his last dollar. And he bought that book. And he took it home, along with the poisons that he had bought to commit suicide with. And he began to read in that book. And he began to learn that his thinking was the source of his problems. He had problems, as we all do. You know, I've had my bumps in the road, and I've let myself get very negative at times. And I should not have done that. But it seems to be what human beings do. But anyway, he would look at that book and he'd read these ideas that, you know, you can change this. Your thoughts cause you to be in the position you're in. You can change your thoughts and your position can be better. You can get out of it. And then it made him mad at first. He was tempted to throw the book out the window. But it caught him, and he kept reading at it, and finally, he started examining himself. He said, "You know, over the years, I've never been really successful at anything. I've been kind of a jack of all trades, but master of none. You know, I've never been really, really good at anything." He said, "What can I do to change the situation and change my thinking?" And he thought that one time, he got an idea about a chemical formula that would restore worn and cracked leather. He said, "You know, I was well on to that formula." He said, "I had put some things together that they worked somewhat, but not. I wasn't satisfied with it. You know, there may be something to that." And he started thinking about it, and he thought of something, of another ingredient that he added to his formula. That very night he thought about it. And the next morning he went to a hardware store, and he convinced the owner to let him have $8 worth of chemicals on credit. He'd already spent his last dollar. And he took those chemicals and he put it together, and he works with the leather. And he says, "Now, where can I market this?" He says, "I've got this. It works." And he took it to a big furniture company in New York City. And they had a big upholstery department with leather. And, you know, the people would bring in their old beat-up couches and what have you that were made of leather. And he said, he told the owner, matter of fact, he called him on the phone. He said, "I've got this formula." He said, "I can restore old worn and cracked leather and make it look really good." And the owner said, "Well," he said, "if you could really do that," said, "we'd sure be interested." And he said, "Well, how about letting me come in and demonstrate?" And he said, "Sure, come on." And he went in that very day. And they had an old couch. Leather looked old and dirty and cracked on the surface, and he worked at it hard, so the work comes into play. You know, with the faith, the work has to be there. He worked at it. He got it all cleaned up, got it ready, and he called the owners, and the owner said, "You switched couches with me." But he finally realized, no, that was the same old couch. But it looked so new and so good that the owner gave him a contract. He said, "Now you're in charge of restoring the leather in the upholstery department and our chain, you know, our store, or chain stores, as the case may be." And he said, "You got a job?" And I guess the man mentioned his situation, that he's 7 weeks behind on rent and no money in his pocket. And the owner wrote out a check. $400. This is advance pay. And this book was written back in the 50s, so 1954 it was copyrighted. So back in those days, $400 probably like $4,000 or more today. But he went home with that money and he had a job, and he had a source of income. His attitude was changed. He was happier. He dedicated his life to wherever he could. He passed out these books on believing. You know, he would buy them and he would give them to people who were having problems to try to help them out so that they could be helped the way he was helped. Believing. My favorite story is, and here I'm about to run over time, Thomas Edison, as I remember, I haven't read the book in a long time, but as a child I remember reading about Thomas Edison, that he was working on the light bulb. He was going to use electricity to create light. Well, he had a shop, and he had helpers, and some of the helpers were getting pretty discouraged, you know. And you know how that goes. Yeah, here we've tried 400 different things, nothing works, and why do we keep on with this? And, you know, the negative outlook. I think we're all guilty of it sometimes, at least. But one of my favorite quotes is, Thomas Edison said, "Oh, no, no, no." He said, "We're making great progress." He said, "We now know 400 different things that won't work." So, there's the persistence, you know. There's the work and the persistence. But he had the faith. You know, he had the faith to keep going. He said, "I believe I can do this. I believe I can use electricity and create light." He did. We can all be thankful. I'm going to leave you with I don't even want to call it a request. I certainly have no position or power to command anything, and I don't even want to call it a request. But let me call it an offer. I've decided what I'm going to do for the next month, between now and the time that I've got a full sermon coming up. It'll be the first one in 8 years coming up next month, if it doesn't get changed. Anyway, I'm going to pray. It doesn't mean I'm have to leave off other things or put this in place of something else, but I'm going to add this to my prayer list. And if you want to write it down, I'll read it slowly, because there's a couple of points in it that are very important, I believe. And I'm going to say, God, give me and my fellow Christians a mind to believe sufficiently to do the necessary work to accomplish our just goals. Now, the reason I want to read it to you, and if need be, I'll read it again. God, give me and my fellow Christians a mind to believe sufficiently to do the necessary work to accomplish our just goals. And the reason I wanted to read it, the two points in there that are very, very important in my opinion, and my fellow Christians, because we don't want this to be a prayer that is a selfish prayer. You know, this is something I want God to do for me so that I'll be, you know, up above my fellow Christians. We don't want it to be that kind of prayer. We want it to be a prayer that all Christians will benefit. So, and my fellow Christians is an important phrase in that. And the other important phrase, to accomplish our just goals. We don't want to be asking God to help us accomplish a goal that is unjust, that is not just. In other words, I know that we've probably all been caught up in the gimme, gimme prayers. You know, I want this and I want that. Will you help me to do this? And some of those things probably were not for our good. And probably we should never ask for them in the first place. So that next phrase there is very, very important, to accomplish our just goals. I want a couple of verses I want to leave you with. Matthew 18, verse 20. And this goes to the heart of why I'm making this as an offer. I'm offering you the opportunity to join me in this prayer. I don't command anybody to do anything. I'm not even requesting it, because if you don't want to do it, it won't work anyway. It's got to be from the heart. It's got to be from you. You've got to want to do it. I'm going to do it. You've got to want to join me. And Here's what will happen. Matthew 18, verse 20. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. That's a promise from Jesus Christ. And if a couple join me in this prayer, Jesus Christ will be in it also. Jesus Christ will be a partner to it. He will be the senior partner. It won't be one of us. He'll be the senior partner in this venture. And then, as a last verse in Proverbs 23, I'll just read verse 6 and 7, but part of verse 7 I'm going to focus in on. Proverbs 23, verses 6 and 7. Eat you not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire you his dainty meats. For he thinketh, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to you, but his heart is not with you. In other words, his mindset is not going to help you a bit, even though he may tell you to come, you know, and eat with me or fellowship with me or let's have a joint venture together. If his mind is not right, don't be a part of it. But the key part is the first part of verse 7. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. If we, as a group, think in our heart positive attitudes and believe God not only has the power to bring good things to us and the neighbors around us, if we have the power to believe it, God is anxious to do it. It will happen as sure as there is a God. It will happen if the belief is there. If we are united in the belief, if we leave off the woe is me, the world is going to pot, and concentrate on God is going to do great things for humankind, and peace is coming to this earth. Believe it.